So this evening is a Saturday night gathering, and this past 2 weeks we've been keeping things pretty quiet here in the monastery, not having any work or chores. It's our beginning of the traditional Vasa period, the rainy season in Asia, which is a traditional time of studying Dhamma and training. So that too, bringing that in as a recollection for us as a community too. Although our main sort of meditation retreat is in the winter time, this is an opportunity to at least slow things down, bring it back. Especially in the West, it's so easy to get swept up into busyness and and particularly America, it's just as there's almost a chronic busyness that is sort of part of the atmosphere. When I was in England about a month ago, one of the one of the monks, I think it was, we were talking, and he was saying that as an average, Americans work about 7 weeks more than Europeans in a year. which is a lot. that whole realm of busyness and so it's just in the whole atmosphere of the society, and it spills into the monastery very easily and readily as well. So that to make a very conscious effort to step back, slow down. And, you know, I think that's what, as practitioners, it's important to make those gestures. Using, say, like the observance days, or using Saturdays, or using, you know, having a day of mindfulness for oneself, or giving oneself opportunities to step back from the realm of engagement and busyness. That being said, of course, today was a community work day here at the monastery, and we were all engaged in various work projects, and there's probably. Well, speaking for myself, I'm tired. I'm sure everybody else is feeling it as well. So, it's important to be, you know, recollecting in terms of activity. Tiredness, you know, how much tiredness is, you know, physical tiredness, how much is mental, in terms of, is it, or, you know, physical busyness, mental busyness, physical pain, mental pain. You know, how much do we carry or create in our mind? How much is just natural to the physical condition or the condition of the what we're doing or duties that we need to perform and do? And of course, that's where it gets really tricky, because the mind is pretty untrustworthy, and we create and we tend to believe it all the time, so it's always telling us things that are believable, have a certain potency to it. And then, how much of it is real, necessary, problematic, or true? It takes... I mean, that's where sometimes there's no absolute clear, definitive answer. It's something that one has to rely on experience and investigation over a long period of time. It's similar to the Buddha saying, you can't really know another person's virtue until you've lived with them, and not just for a short time but for a long time. You can't really know another person's wisdom until you've had discussion spoken with them, and not just for a short time but for a long time. You can't really know another person's patience and resilience without seeing them in circumstances of difficulty, and not just for a short time, but for a long time. So that in the same for ourselves, understanding ourselves and to actually come into touch with our own virtue, our own wisdom, our own patience. These are things to be cultivated over a long time, not just a short time. It takes that sort of time, familiarity, see the range of reactions that we have, the way that the mind swings back and forth, and to really get a handle on what really works, what is actually beneficial, what's useful, what's true. So that is relying on our and being willing to experiment, to investigate within our own experience around those realms. So what works for me in practice? How do I deal with certain situations? How do I deal with situations of busyness, in a sense, or responsibility? Because all of us, whether we're monastics or lay people, we have certain areas of responsibility, and we have to learn how to cultivate a quality of being grounded in Dhamma, being grounded in the teachings. This past week, I've been doing some readings from a biography of Ajahn Leem, who is the abbot of Ajahn Chah's monastery. He was sort of successor and looks after the community of at Ajahn Chah's monastery of Wat Pa Phong. And he was saying that, you know, giving his own perspectives on responsibility and duties, work, and that they are just being recognizing it as just as changing postures, that we're sometimes sitting and we have to be attentive to sitting. Sometimes we're walking and engaging in activity and we have to be mindful of that as a posture. We're standing. So just seeing it as changing postures that we have to be attentive to, and not making more out of it than that. And Ajahn Leem, for those who know him or have seen him, then one recognizes that isn't just sort of theoretical or something that he's quoting from a book somewhere, but very much how he lives. And there's a sense of real coolness and detachment in his in any engagement, and that's it's helpful to have that perspective. Or see that as a possibility. Other people, may express their engagement in, rather than detachment, or real engagement. Remember one time going to a monastery, and it was a contemporary of Ajahn Chah. And he came in to the hall and immediately started organizing, very much engaged. And I said, it was very clear immediately who the senior monk was. So that's obviously the senior monk. And it was quite similar to Ajahn Chah in the sense that very much engaged and ready to point things out to people, ready to get things done in a way that he liked, he preferred. He didn't just sort of step back and have a detached quality, although one didn't get a sense of confusion that was created by the activity. So there's many different expressions, and that somebody like Ajahn Leem, although he has this very detached attitude, and he's also usually in the thick of things as well. There's a great picture of we did a commemorative book on the funeral ceremony for Ajahn Chah, and there's a great picture of the building of the foundations of the stupa or chediya that we used as the funeral pyre for Ajahn Chah. It's a large affair. And during the pouring, you can see Ajahn Leem sort of in the cement pouring mode and ragged old work robes, and it's just right in the thick of things. That didn't preclude engaging And also remember Ajahn Sumedho, who is our he is the senior elder, Western disciple of Ajahn Chah, and Ajahn Thun, who is the Thai monk who lives next door, or is the teacher of the community sort of next door to us on the mountain, KPY, and they're both quite old, I guess. Well, Ajahn Sumedho is 70 this year. Ajahn Thun is probably about 70 this year. And they met, poor, 35 years ago, something like that. And they remembered each other because they were both visiting a senior, highly respected monk's monastery, Ajahn Mahabua's. And they met, they're building the wall around the monastery. They're sort of schlepping bricks and mixing cement. And it's sort of part of existence is having, there's sometimes work needs to be done and learning, trying to make it part of practice. And how do we relate to it? How do we? Because the tendency is so often, and whether it's in the monastery or whether it's in the world, it's always waiting for it to be over, so that one can enjoy oneself or relax, and that's you notice that mental state where we're, and that's actually what we tend to be doing with everything, in the sense that waiting for whatever we're doing to be over, and then we can get on to what we really want to do. And it's, how much of life in the world is waiting for the weekend, or waiting for the holidays, or waiting for retirement, and then we can get on with life and what we really want to do. And we carry that with us. And it's that fundamental nature of desire that is always looking to the future, looking to something else. So it's difficult to be content with what we're experiencing, what we're doing, what we're, and we do the same thing in our meditation. How do we relate to stillness? How do we relate to non-activity? Because some of the biggest sort of projects get dreamed up in times of retreat. How do we relate to stillness? Or even in terms of what does the mind do when we turn to stillness? There's different ways that we do. One is just the activity, the mind that engages in activity and thinking and proliferating can't stop. That's one thing that happens. And it's looking for something, anything. Anything to be thinking about, anything to be engaged in, anything to be uh could be dragging up the things in the future. Going to the past, but it's that sort of busyness in the mind, and not able to. Whenever there's an opportunity for stillness, and then we still it's hard to put things down and really be present, and that quality of not being content, not being happy, not experiencing well-being in the present moment. It's not enough. And we can also, another way of relating to stillness, relating to non-activity, is then to sort of sink into either dullness or really does become non-active. The mind isn't alert, isn't bright, isn't able to be with. So it tends to sort of zone out or space out or drift. Starts to drift. It's not sort of sharp. It's not clear. It's not present. Because it's not engaging in stillness. Because when, in terms of practice, whether it's stillness or activity, we need to engage in it. In terms of, we have to be mindful, we have to be present, we have to be discerning, we have to be attentive. And at first, that seems like almost like an imposition. Because again, it's sort of when we're looking to something else. And so, like when I get my meditation together, then I won't have to bother with this having to be mindful and attentive business. That's a fallacy. There needs to be engagement and attentiveness. And of course, it's something that we have to cultivate as an attitude that becomes very much part of our nature, part of our deep habit. And not just saying when I say a habit, it's like something that is a default option. It's interesting to recognize, what are the default options that we go to when either we have activity or when we have stillness? What do we take as a default option? Do we go to irritation, or do we go to fantasy, or do we go to boredom, or do we go to some sort of desire system? Or is the default option as a practitioner of Dhamma, really trying to cultivate the qualities of attention and mindfulness, discernment and investigation, compassion and kindness, patience and equanimity. These are the kind of really trying to cultivate those qualities, so that's what the mind is taking refuge in. And that's really what, when we take so much of the practice is really being able to take the basics that we, when we first hear about Buddhism or start cultivating Buddhist practice, and then just the what is considered sort of the first step that one does, it's like taking refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha. And as we continue to practice and learn how to test ourselves and train ourselves in different circumstances ways of how we, that things that we have to face. It's just, but more and more what we see that is that, like, the heart is really taking refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha, taking refuge in wisdom as the Buddha as the embodiment of wisdom, Dhamma the embodiment of truth, Sangha embodiment of virtue, taking refuge in virtue, truth and wisdom. That is really what the refuge that we rely on, that the heart turns towards. And again, you don't recognize, in order to sort of recognize and investigate, and sort of seeing, well, what's the, when a circumstance comes up, when either we so we have activity that we need to engage in, or we have opportunity for stillness and quiet. What does the heart seek refuge in? And so that sort of was it, it's sort of seeing, okay, well, that's either it's something that is seeing clearly, oh yeah, that really is an appropriate refuge. Or to see, well, that's not really a functional refuge. If the one is going to just the either irritation or complaining or grumbling or boredom. There's so many unskillful options that we can take. And in the same light, there's just as many skillful options that we can take. So it's like really presenting that to the heart, and that's what practice is. So often we get caught up in the technique of things. My mindfulness of breathing, or my particular pet reflection that I go to all the time, which are, those that it, and I'm not saying that one shouldn't be cultivating that. Those, we use the techniques, but we also have to recognize, that the techniques, the methods, it's for assisting us to really be able to have a refuge, to take refuge in wisdom, in truth, in virtue, in having Buddha Dhamma Sangha as a solid refuge. So that's then the teachings and the practice really become something that we integrate into our daily life, into our day-to-day activity as much as we can. And as we continue to practice, as we continue to train ourselves, then it just becomes increasingly clear that it's efficacious in being able to live if not without suffering, then at least with diminished suffering, with a sense of well-being that is really brings a quality of illumination to the heart. So that sense of just doing the training in whatever circumstance, and bringing it back to the getting a grounding in refuge. It's interesting. I'm reading the biography of Ajahn Mun, who's of course he's considered one of the great meditation masters, greatest meditation masters of the 20th century in Thailand, and how much of his time in teaching was spent on you know, really trying to establish people in refuge. Because when we think of Ajahn Mun, it's oftentimes absolute, and he was an absolute virtuoso meditation practitioner himself and teacher. And what he accomplished in his lifetime was truly amazing. But it was never taken off into the realms of ethereal and distant kinds of teaching or way he lived. It was always teachings on refuge. Was a lot of his time was taught in that, how to do that. Because it's if with that without a base, then it's difficult to accumulate the qualities which are really allow us to see truth, to realize freedom. So that being attentive to the base, attentive to the foundation, is critical. And it's not to be sort of not to be skipped over or not giving it due attention. Anyway, those are some rambling thoughts after a long day of work. I'll offer that for reflection.